This is Frankly MSP, where managed service providers get real.
Hey, and welcome to episode 26 of Frankly MSP, the podcast for managed service providers who want to boost their productivity, efficiency, and profitability. I'm your host, Jennifer Tribe. Today on the show, I'll be talking to Todd Kane, founder and president of Evolved Management Consulting, where he works with MSPs on improving the profits in their business while decreasing stress. Always a good thing. Before launching Evolve, Todd was VP of operations at a large MSP called Fully Managed, based in Vancouver. And before that, he led technical groups for some major businesses like Bell Canada and WestJet. Todd and I are going to be digging into the MSP tool stack. What tools you absolutely need, places where MSPs typically fall down in buying and implementing tools, managing integrations, and whether full product suites like the ConnectWise stack, for example, are better than a mix and match approach. Lots of good takeaways from that conversation, so stay tuned, that's coming up. But first, we turn to Richard Tubb and Carl Palachuk for a look at what's going on in the world through an MSP lens.
You're listening to Frankly MSP, brought to you by Avic Networks.
Hey folks, Richard Tubb here at home in Newcastle upon Tyne in the northeast of the UK. And as always, I'm joined by my great friend and MSP expert, Carl Palachuk. How are you doing today, Carl?
Very, very good. A little cool here at the end of summer in Sacramento.
A little cool for you, I suspect, would be a roasting hot day for us here in Newcastle upon Tyne. And talking of roasting, I want to jump straight in with a story that caught my attention this week from IT Pro magazine. Now, here in the UK, the football season, or soccer to our American friends, is just about to kick off and has started in many cases. West Ham United Football Club, they're a London-based football club. Last week, they sent a mass email out to their season ticket holders. Now, there's nothing unusual about that, except that the West Ham administration emailed their 500-plus away season ticket holders all in the to line of the email, revealing every recipient's email address. Breach of GDPR, anyone? Now, this is a story, Carl, that's really interesting me from an MSP perspective for two reasons. The first one, this is, I think, the first accidental data leak that I'm aware of since GDPR coming in. And secondly, I actually tracked down a press release from West Ham United Football Club in July 2017, and it trumpeted, and I quote, "Premier League club shows commitment to GDPR. West Ham United has partnered with leading cybersecurity consultancy, Forgenix, to help safeguard its data and prepare for data protection changes." Ouch.
I'm glad that wasn't my IT company.
You and me both, yeah. So I think that the reason this is so relevant to MSPs is I'm sure Forgenix, the cybersecurity consultancy, put in place all necessary measures to keep West Ham's data safe from a technical perspective, PCI, DSS, and all those things. Unfortunately, it does appear they clearly didn't work hard enough to prevent that one major cause of data breaches, and that's human error. Now, to put this into perspective, the GDPR regulation says that in the event of any data breach, those affected should be notified within 72 hours of discovering the breach. The ICO do confirm they've received a report from West Ham United. However, the GDPR regulations do suggest that the penalty for non-compliance with GDPR is 4% of annual global turnover, or up to 20 million euros, whichever is greater. This could be a very, very costly human error for West Ham United, eh, Carl?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, the old joke is that the error is the nut that holds the keyboard. When I do security trainings, I always tell people that I can put all of this stuff in place to avoid viruses and whatever. But when I'm training people on avoiding phishing attacks or crypto viruses or whatever, I tell them, at the end of the day, I can't stop you from clicking on something. Mm-hmm. Right. And if a virus says, please click here so I can infect your computer, you have to do the clicking, right? It can't click for you. And so at the end of the day, you are responsible for your own security.
Now, I was hesitant to include this in the story because I cannot confirm this. But in terms of when the ICO say that GDPR regulations suggest those affected should be notified within 72 hours of discovering the breach, there are a few tweets that I found from West Ham fans online that said, sure enough, they were notified that their email address had been shared out. Unfortunately, they were notified in amongst an email with the other 500 people. So I can't confirm that. Maybe just a bit of banter, a bit of joking, but certainly given the human error here, I certainly wouldn't put that past it. What can we do as MSPs, Carl, to help our clients avoid these catastrophic issues?
It's a training opportunity. And one of the things that I always encourage people to do is follow the news, follow what's going on, as they say, simply because it's an opportunity for you to put this in front of your clients and say, just a reminder, don't do this. One of the best things you can do in any company, but certainly in an IT company, is to have a regular newsletter and inform your clients about stuff that's going on. And just reminder, 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 because you think you told them once and now they know, check the box. But in the real world, they need to be told again and again and again forever.
I think there's also a piece here, isn't there, about email etiquette in general. I mean, I know a lot of people within the IT industry, younger people within the IT industry, who don't really know what CC and BCC means. And there's certainly many more clients of MSPs who aren't really sure what that CC and or the carbon copy and blind carbon copy are actually for. So there is a piece here, isn't there, to do with email etiquette and just almost having a checklist. If you're going to send a bulk email out, is everything in order? Are you copying in anybody you shouldn't? What do you think about this, Carl? How can we educate people to just have good email etiquette?
Again, I think quarterly trainings are good. Newsletters are good. You know, constantly just having a banter about good processes and procedures. The funny thing is that many email programs will stop you from doing the most blatant things. I don't know why they can't say, look, you can't have more than five people copied in an email under any circumstances. A lot of the filtering that started 10 years ago when some email providers wouldn't let you send an email to more than a large number of people because they don't want you to be using your personal email as a listserv, basically.
Yeah, I use Google Apps. And certainly if I write an email that says, find the attachments, or I've attached something and then click on send, of course, I don't attach a file. Google Apps has got a certain level of intelligence where it says, hey, you mentioned an attachment, but I don't see an attachment. Do you want to send this anyway? So I'm sort of shocked at this stage of the game that we don't have more of that. I'm not going to call it AI or machine learning. We'll get onto that in just a second, but certainly more of that knowledge there, more of those systems to actually call up users and say, are you actually doing what you meant to do here?
Right. It seems like it should be straightforward, but I don't write email programs. So
now we were talking about AI. Of course, barely a week can go by without some sort of AI story coming to our attention. But you've picked on one that I think is really interesting. And it's from Search Engine Journal about how search marketers can leverage artificial intelligence and machine learning. Tell us a bit more about that.
Just a quick preface, I would say. You mentioned we don't know whether we want to call this AI. And so I think the whole concept of artificial intelligence is evolving. I actually heard the term AI in a radio commercial yesterday. So now whether people know what that is, you know, there's some stuff where what's really going on is machine learning. Part of what's going on is using big data. Part of what's going on is the evolution of voice recognition. But all of these things are coming together and making search seem a little more intelligent. One of the weaknesses of our current search system is, let's say that you wanted to learn how to put out a specialty food product. Well, if you don't know the terminology that you need, then you start looking and you just get into this tiny little loop and you get the same results again and again and again, and they're not helpful. And it's only after you learn the terminology, you know, think about managed services. If you're looking for computer consulting, you can go a long ways without finding out that there's a thing called managed services. Mm. But once you know the term, then the world opens up to you. And so part of what's happening is that search engines are becoming smarter and smarter. And this article from the Search Engine Journal is about ways to use that so that you can help your clients get the best search results when you're doing kind of new age SEO.
It's a fascinating article because search used to be about indexing info and organizing it and then finding it for people. I mean, I'm old enough to remember some of the early search engines like AltaVista. But now we've got AI and natural language understanding, or many people sort of use them interchangeably. But we're actually seeing search engines understand the context of data and the relationships between it, aren't we?
there's also the evolution of what we are looking for and what we expect computers to be able to do. It used to be that we would do searches to find knowledge. We would do searches to say, what are the books on this? What are the articles on this? What are some samples of this? Now we're looking to solve problems. And so as search engines become sophisticated enough, they actually are trying to figure out, so what exactly are you trying to solve, right? And so that's where artificial intelligence can really shine, is to try to get below the terms. You mentioned AltaVista. Remember how people used to cheat AltaVista? They would make the text white at the bottom of the page and they would put in every word in the dictionary.
Yeah. Because it was so blunt back then, wasn't it? It was literally just keyword searching.
Exactly. So keywords are fine, but they don't get to the point. I mean, even now, if you buy Google Ads, it'll say, what are you trying to do? Or Facebook ads or any other ads. What are you trying to do? Are you trying to convert? Are you trying to educate? Or you want somebody to visit your website? You want somebody to join your group? Even the results of what we want are a little more sophisticated. There are keywords, if you think about it, that you use a different keyword when you're trying to learn about something than you do when you're trying to buy something. Mm. But also there's different behaviors. Search engines now look at all of the things you've put into the search engine in the last 2 days to figure out, are you trying to buy something or are you trying to solve a problem? You know, how do I do this? How do I do that? Versus where do I get the best price on something?
One of the things that sprung out to me about this article, Carl, I don't know if you picked up on it yourself or whether you were already aware, I wasn't aware of Bing, the Microsoft search engine. I could stop the conversation there, couldn't I? And that wouldn't surprise people. I wasn't aware of it. But I wasn't aware that Bing, the Microsoft search engine, has got a new intelligent search feature that's actually powered by AI. Does some very clever things. I mean, this is a feature that came out in December 2017, so a good 8-9 months ago now. Does things such as, perhaps if you're searching for details about a debate, an argument about, you know, what's best, this or that. What Bing is actually doing is collating some of that info into a single window, saying here's the pros for it and here's the cons, or here's the argument for, here's the argument against. So that's fascinating, because for me, Bing is the search engine that most people, you know, it's massively overlooked, isn't it? A tiny portion of the market compared to what Google are doing. And yet Bing have got that feature that I think is really powerful in certain situations.
When I look through my web logs, Google represents about 90% of the search traffic. It is the 800-pound gorilla, but Bing, actually, when I look at this and I think, oh, how can I use that? It makes me wonder whether I should be using Bing more. So clearly, that's exactly what they wanted, obviously.
Yeah, you and me both. I think there are going to be, and we'll include a link to that in the show notes here, to that 2017 update from Bing. But it is worth being aware of, because there are going to be certain search terms that actually I think Bing's going to be a much better fit for.
And there's also a growing interest in voice, although voice doesn't currently play a huge role in search. As the what they call smart speakers become the norm, then we're going to see more of the voice. And then you might actually use AI to say, oh, here's the what that intonation sounds like. What, do they sound happy? Do they sound angry? You
know? So I think the bottom line here is that marketers should care about AI, because search is becoming more intelligent through it. And that does affect MSPs and how we're found in the market. So, Carl, that's what's been going on for us this week. Where are you off to in the next couple of weeks?
I'm going to Channel Pro in Boston. And then a couple of weeks after that, I go back to Boston. There's nothing like flying all the way across the United States twice in a month. Well, four times in a month. And I'll see you at Continuum.
Yeah, we mentioned on the last episode that we might record a live episode of the podcast. Well, yeah, we are going to record a live episode of the podcast. So if you're in Boston for Continuum Navigate 2018, you're a fan of the IVIC podcast, come and give us a shout, because we would love to have you join us for the live episode. So that's what's been going on. Carl, thanks as always for joining me. We will look forward to speaking to you all next time.
You're listening to Frankly MSP.
You'll find links to the resources Carl and Richard discuss in today's show notes at avic.com/franklymsp/026. Now we come to my chat with Todd Kane of Evolved Management Consulting, talking about how to get the most out of your MSP tool stack. Hi, Todd. Welcome to Frankly MSP.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Today, we're going to talk about the MSP tool stack. And I know this is a topic that's near and dear to many MSPs because tools are so important in their business. So we're very excited to have you here today. Let's start off with a big question. What do you see as the biggest mistakes that MSPs are making when it comes to the tool stack in their business?
Yeah, I think the one that I see most is that people are actually approaching the problem in the wrong way. And what I tend to see is people use technology to try and solve a people problem. And where you would see examples of this is particularly around accountability or not using a tool properly. So they'll go and get a different tool. That's a big one that I see a lot with people is they think that technology can solve all problems when really they just probably need to have a conversation with someone to set a new process in place or to provide someone more training. The other part that I would see is people that barely deploy what they're purchasing. So they get attracted to these shiny objects. They go to a conference. They love what they see and are really excited about what this tool can do for them. They go back, they roll it out, maybe hand it off to someone else for a deployment project, but don't really structure the deliverables very well. And they end up with the solution basically 20% implemented. And then they kind of look at it and say, well, I don't know, we didn't get the value out of this. And that's an unfair judgment for a lot of those tool sets, because if you don't spend the time on it, then it's unlikely to produce that ROI for you.
So going back to the first issue where you're trying to solve a people problem with a technology tool, how do you go about figuring out what tools you need?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think a lot of it starts with the basic mechanics of the MSP. So what tool sets do you need broadly? If you're going to be doing a more mature MSP and getting away from the typical break fix stuff, then obviously you need a PSA and RMM and working in more of a structured process so that you have a ticketing system and that you have some level of automation and cohesive stack that you're using for all of the people to have for that use. That's probably the most important place to start is the bare bones of what an MSP needs. The rest of it really comes down to where can you get better insights? So the reason you would use a PSA is to see the tickets and to see where the work is going and to be able to track that. And what kind of work are we actually doing? And if all of that exists in an email platform, it's really difficult to extract that and to use that for some level of business intelligence. And then on the RMM side, you're hoping to increase automation and hopefully to reduce that manual labor. And another one would be low touch backups that falls into the reducing manual labor as well. A lot of younger MSPs or back in the day, what people would do is have drive caddies on site and either the person in the office or worse, they would send a tech over there to swap out the drives in those caddies every once in a while. And it's a huge waste of labor. And that's another area that is really critical to start to tune down as you grow. Another area would be documentation, and that allows for reduction of cost of labor. So not everyone has to be a super expert on all of the different tools and technology that you're using in the organization, and you can kind of democratize that information through documentation platform. Therefore, the lower cost of labor in your organization can actually support those more difficult tickets.
And what about tips for getting more out of the tools that you have purchased?
I think the biggest thing is lean on the vendors. Most of the vendors for the tool sets it's in their best interest to make sure that you've deployed them properly, to utilize them as much as possible, to make sure that you're getting the most from them. That 20% deployment that we talked about before is usually where people struggle. So just making sure that you're deploying those technologies as much as possible. And probably one of the best ways to do that is more of a structured engagement around the deployment so that you're actually treating it like a project. You have a vision of what you actually want to produce with the rollout of that tool set and that you work with the people deploying that product to make sure that it's handled in a project fashion so that you're looking for what are we trying to achieve? Did we achieve that? Are we getting from this platform what we're hoping? And the other piece would be, you know, if you have a peer group or consultants like myself and others that can help you with the best practices to make sure that the uniqueness of every organization is factored into your tools. It's something that I do see a lot is despite the fact that everyone is doing the same business in the IT support field, none of the companies operate in exactly the same way. So there's always some customization or little isms that may have to get factored into how you're utilizing those tools.
And so RMM and PSA, I think you mentioned off the top, if you're not doing break fix, if you're in managed services, those are considered table stakes for MSPs these days, are they not?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And then beyond that, you've mentioned backups and documentation. Are those the next areas you should be looking at if you've now got those RMM and PSA tools locked down and you're looking for that next level of efficiency or productivity?
Yeah, I think so, because the biggest lever point that you get out of that is the democratization of that information so that you're not limited on the information available or certain tech that you have to rely on to know the information regarding that support ticket. So that can really be helpful. It also helps create a scaling within the organization. You can't really improve a process if the process doesn't exist to begin with. So the minimum SOP, or your basically minimum viable SOP as a starting place for building out that documentation, is better than nothing. And just leaving people to be, I'll trust you all to do your job well, doesn't really scale that well. So having some common core and some consistency to your operation becomes really, really critical. Some other areas that I think become a lot more important as you get bigger as well is reducing risk. So if you can offset the risk around ransomware or malware infections, and those are things like OpenDNS or some type of low-touch backup system that can recover from ransomware really quickly. And then the last one that I would add in this is, a lot of people try to cut some cost by trying to build some of these things themselves. They'll look at the documentation platforms and say, oh, that's too expensive. I can build this in OneNote or in Confluence or something like that. And they negate the cost of the true cost of labor of building this stuff out. So yeah, you can use Confluence. It's a decent solution, but you have to be ready for the amount of time that you're going to have to spend building up that solution to make it useful for your organization. And I think a lot of people skip past what they think the labor cost actually is associated with that project versus just getting an off-shelf industry standard solution that is going to get you what you need a lot quicker.
What would you say is the payoff? I know that some MSPs do struggle with that, it's going to be X dollars per month and our profit margin just doesn't sustain that at the moment. What's your advice on balancing that investment and the ROI that they can expect?
I think it really depends on where you're starting from and what the cost of the tools are and how you're going to view them being rolled into your total solution. So some of these solutions are just a part of what are going to be the base package of what you're offering to the client. So it's not that you can upsell certain things, and you do have to be careful about what tools you're going to be including as a part of that base package. But the other part that I recommend for people to consider is what I refer to as the fries with that model. So you have your base package, the all-you-can-eat support and services. It includes the things that they would get from regular support, PSA, RMM, maybe a couple of other tool sets. AV usually goes in there. And then there's other things that are going to be more appealing to the 20% of your client base versus the 80%. And that's where the fries with that solutions can come in really handy. So not everyone is going to be super keen or have a necessity for a more advanced security solutions, like things like archiving or compliance or more advanced security techniques. And those are things that you can offer as an additional add-on to the base package to control the costs. The other part that I think where people get in trouble is, in general, they tend to underprice the solution. And the worst thing in any business is being the second to lowest price. You definitely don't want to be the cheapest, but you sure don't want to be the second cheapest. And you definitely don't want to be the most expensive, but I always encourage people, don't be afraid to go up market. You can probably sell your solution to a better fit of a client that is going to accept a higher cost of support if you can justify what they're actually getting in value associated with that. And this is a really scary tactic for people just sort of getting started and they're scrapping away trying to win some clients. But over time, if you want to scale, you need to understand the true cost of your service and make sure that you're building enough margin to be able to support them and utilize those tools in what you're selling as a whole.
What about early days? I read a lot on Reddit, MSPs who are just starting out. They're maybe just by themselves or they have one other employee and they don't necessarily have the volume of work to justify investing in a PSA or an RMM right away, and yet they know that they need it. Is there some sort of rule of thumb about when it makes sense to get those tools into your business?
I would definitely start as early as you can. And I think the variety of solutions in the market really make that possible. Sure, maybe you don't want to go with ConnectWise if you're just one guy. There's some legitimate reasons as to why you would, but it tends to be a little more of a costly solution. And some of those solutions, for example, will have install fees that are pretty pricey, and that can be a barrier for some of the small folks as well. But there's at least a dozen PSAs and probably half a dozen or more RMMs out there that are really well suited for the smaller shops and the one or two man teams. I certainly wouldn't limit anyone based on cost. There's something that will fit the model of your business. And coming back to that cost of your solution, in general, I suggest to people, if you're selling an MSA solution for less than $100 a month, say, it's really difficult to scale in most of your costs and make a really good margin on that dollar amount. It's not that it's not possible, but if you see people that are out there pitching, $50 a seat or $75 a seat, then the quality of that solution is probably going to be a bit suspect versus someone who's more in the range of $125 to $150 per month per user, which is more typical of what you see in the market. And really what that takes into account is what are the true cost of supporting an entity in a true fashion of the MSP, where it's really well looked after, you have all the right tools deployed, and it becomes scalable as you get bigger as an organization.
If you start out with one of those smaller PSAs or RMMs that are suited to the smaller size, should you be keeping in mind that, as I grow, I'm going to need to switch at some point? And what kind of pain or cost is associated with switching?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's always something you should keep in mind. I think one of the first pages I always go to for any technical solution or tool that I'm looking at is going to the APIs. So the more integrated that solution is, the less data siloing that you end up with, where there's proprietary stacks or some information is going to get locked up somewhere and it becomes unavailable. That becomes really, really important. So this is a good way to frame how you're actually going to grow. If you expect to be growing really, really quickly, then maybe you want to support a higher cost base for the solution that you're going to use and jump to solution number two instead of starting with number one. If you feel like you're going to be replacing this thing after 6 months, then it's probably not worth deploying. You should probably go to solution two to begin with. But probably the easiest way around that is making sure that your ecosystem of your solutions all talk to each other. And if you're having to build things in Zapier or do manual database migrations and things like that, it's probably not going to be able to scale with you. And you look at most of the industry solutions, a lot of them spend a lot of time on the APIs. And I would say this is, in my opinion, one of the reasons why ConnectWise became so dominant was because of the API and the ecosystem that they built around the community. It naturally attracted more people to lob onto that ecosystem as well.
Now let's talk about integrations for a minute. So ConnectWise is a good example of a company that has a whole suite of integrated tools. So you can get manage and integrate it with Automate and integrate it with Sell and Share. So do you recommend that MSPs go for that single vendor stack versus bits and pieces from a number of vendors?
I would say there's certainly a value to it. I'm not sure that I would necessarily say it's required either, though. The solutions like Sell, for example, is a decent solution. A lot of the companies that I work with have Sell implemented, but all of the things that it does are based on that API integration, and QuoteWorks, for example, does most of the same things. So maybe the integration cycles move quicker on a single integrated stack, but it's not likely, as long as you're choosing a solution that has a good API, that you're going to be limited in doing something. I would say the other reason to consider an integrated stack is if you need all of those tools, you might get a little more leverage from pricing if you have a full suite. So if you're talking to ConnectWise, for example, and you say, I'm going to buy the whole suite and all of your solutions, maybe they'll give you a more appealing price model than if you're just picking one and then going to another vendor and you're only using one solution from each of them.
And one thing that I've heard recommended is that if you're, a bit of a bigger shop and you are implementing these tools, that you should have a dedicated resource or someone who has in their job description something that makes them specifically responsible for maintaining the tools and making sure that people are using the tools in a consistent way. Is that something that you recommend?
Yeah, definitely. This becomes a lot more important as the solutions get bigger and start to require maybe a full FTE of support. This is, I think, under the Pika model called centralized services, which is what I've typically called it in the past. And I do really like this. There's so much that can be improved, and the amount of maintenance and support and the operational improvements that you can make from these tool sets if you really dedicate some time and attention to them. And that really doesn't happen off the side of someone's desk, especially if you're still scrapping away and trying to scale, then you're potentially not as proactive in your solutioning and your automation as you could be. And if you can afford to break out someone, even to spend like a day a week to really focus on those tool sets, then that becomes super, super valuable. And one area that I think is maybe a good measure of this is if you have backups deployed for all of your clients and you have one person who's starting to spend most of their week just managing and maintaining backups, then obviously you need to start to parcel out some people to maintain those back-end systems, those central platforms that touch all of your clients.
Cool. Wrapping up, what is your biggest piece of advice for MSPs who are looking at their tool stack and trying to optimize it?
I think the biggest piece would be making sure that you're data driven. So these tool sets, one of the most powerful pieces that they offer is that there are amazing insights inside of each one of these tools. And if you understand how to represent that data and interpret that data, it can really advance how you're managing your business, because all of a sudden you're aware of these things that you may have felt and had some sense of. But if you can really have this objective data to be able to manage from, it is a really powerful element in the business to help the standardization of how you approach things. And that's why I'm a big fan of utilizing dashboards and reporting, so that not only are you getting objective data about the business itself, but you can also utilize that objective data in managing the people. And you'll see amazing results from people if you can simply agree on what are the expectations of that role, what are the expectations of a department, what are the expectations of service overall. And one of the best places you can get that data is from the tools that you're already utilizing.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Todd. This has been really interesting.
Thanks for having me.
That was Todd Kane, president of Evolved Management Consulting. Todd has a great podcast of his own called Evolved Radio that you might want to check out. I'll put a link to that and the rest of Todd's contact information in the show notes at ovic.com/franklymsp/026. Remember to subscribe to Frankly MSP in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast app of choice to ensure you never miss a beat on your way to service provider success. Till next time, this is Jennifer Tribe. Thanks for listening.
Frankly MSP, brought to you by Ovic Networks, the most efficient and profitable way to manage your clients' networks.